Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world. Hello and welcome to the Daily Briefing. Today is Monday, February 28th. Amanda Borchel-Dunn here, and I'm joined by Biranit Goren, the editor of our Hebrew sister site, Zman Yisrael, and our health reporter, Nathan Jaffe. Hello to you both.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Good to see you both. We are, of course, continuing to follow reports out of the ongoing Ukraine crisis. Cities continued to be bombed last night and residents hunkered down amidst rumors of peace talks. For continuous updates, please check out the Times of Israel's website. Later in the program, we'll hear about the lifting of coronavirus restrictions in Israel. Our diplomatic correspondent, Lisa Berman, arrived in Poland last night and is making his way to the border with Ukraine. Laser, you flew to Poland last night to start your journey to Ukraine's border. What is your sense of how the Ukraine crisis is viewed from there?
Hi, Amanda. I'm here in downtown Warsaw. And I think what's important to remember is that Poland has always had two powerful enemies, one to the west, which is Germany, and one to the east, which is Russia. Now, Polish-German relations have obviously improved in modern times, but Russia, it really hasn't. They were a threat in the days of the Soviet Union. And I think most Poles would see, even if they don't have animosity toward Russian people, they certainly see Putin as the major threat to Poland today. So they are certainly watching with alarm. What's going on is going on right over the border, and refugees are starting to come through. I was just speaking with Rabbi Shudrich, who's the rabbi here in Warsaw. And he was telling me about the preparations that the Jewish community has been doing here for even before the Thursday, before the invasion started. So they are set up. They've had dozens of Jews coming through. Some are heading on to Israel, but some are staying here, and they're making preparations for many more. So they're certainly alarmed. They're certainly concerned. There are certainly people who are starting to think about perhaps where next, even if that's not exactly a possibility that might actually happen in the near term. It's hard not to start having those thoughts when you're over the border and you've been invaded by Russia in the past. So there's certainly a level of alarm here, and people are paying attention to what's going on not too far away in Ukraine.
Let's hear a short excerpt of that interview with Chief Rabbi Michael Shudrich now.
The actual bombing started, I think, was on Thursday.
Yeah.
Seems like about 100 years ago. The week before already, I was already organizing. I was looking for places. The Woods Jewish community has a small hotel. It's kind of a hostel. The Jewish community of Warsaw, which is responsible for Lublin, part of the Yeshivat Chachmilim today is a hotel. And we have also a smaller one in Kazimierz. To say, are we ready to close the hotels and the hostels and use them for refugees? So we were ready for that. That was already, a few days before it even began. Because it was, and some people look at me like, why are you doing this now? Nothing's happened. So, in Judaism, it says to a person who's goses, who's about to pass away, said it's better to say vidui and not die than to die without vidui. Okay. So I said the same thing here. Better we should go through the whole preparation and no one comes than the opposite. And so by Friday, which already was after the first day of the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, we had immediately organized a crisis management group. Mm-hmm. The crisis management group was made up of basically activists from within the community, but the activists came from the Jewish community of Warsaw, the Joint, the Sochnut, Hillel, the American Jewish Committee. Basically, we got the entire alphabet covered, between JDC, AJC.
They have representatives stationed here permanently?
AJC does, JDC does, Sochnut does. And also, we're also coordinating very closely with the Israeli embassy. And this is the first time I've seen really the whole community just, we're always like in good relations. We're one of the few lucky communities. But really, that just all working on the same team.
Bira, tell us about a piece on Zman Yisrael by Ira Tolchin, which describes solidarity in Israel between our Russian-speaking communities.
Well, Israel has a unique situation. I don't know if it's paralleled anywhere in the world. In the 1990s, we had over a million immigrants, Jewish immigrants, come from the former USSR. And so factually, we have hundreds of thousands of Russians and hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians who live here in the same community, essentially. For good or bad, the native Israelis, if you will, have never really deferred between them. I mean, they seem the whole, you know, Russians, Ukrainians, they all look the same to us. So in a way, they live together, they share the same culture, the same memories. You know, we need to remember Ukraine and Russia were part of the USSR for 70 years. People grew up there sharing the same culture, saw the same movies, spoke the same language, went to the same schools. They really are in every way, shape, and form brothers, you know, or brother nations. So right now, for the Israelis who came from there, you know, the immigrants that have been here for 30 years now, but when they look at their countries, you know, fighting against each other, it's quite disheartening. And so Ira was writing about it, the dynamics of how essentially they refuse to see each other's enemies. For them, they're one big family, and they blame Putin. They literally, the message that she was saying, this is not a war between two countries. It's a war of a single man. They call him the crazy old man. That's how they called it. She brought quotes from various people and saying the crazy old man is attacking our brothers, and you know the Russians are feeling ashamed of what he's doing to the Ukrainians. It kind of encapsulates, I guess, what happens in Russia as well. You know, as of last night, over 6,000 people were arrested there for taking part in anti-war demonstrations. So it reflects, I guess, on the immigration community here in Israel as well.
We'll go to a short break.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Nathan, Israel is lifting restrictions tomorrow after 2 years of a state of emergency for the coronavirus pandemic. What is the status of the pandemic currently in the country?
This has been a really tough wave for Israel with huge numbers of cases. But what we do see is that the peak is a few weeks behind us, 3-4 weeks behind us. And we see now that numbers are falling as we hoped they would. So if we see that, you know, a few weeks ago, the moving average of new daily cases was about 75,000. Now it's at about 10,000. So that's a very, very sharp reduction. And we're seeing also that this is filtering through to hospitals. So hospitals now have far fewer cases. Wow. The number of serious cases in hospitals has about halved over the last 3 weeks. So from 1,242 now down to 620. And really, I guess we can kind of breathe because, yeah, this has taken a massive toll on the whole nation. But the worst case scenario, that we were worried about of hospitals becoming overwhelmed did not happen. And we're clearly now exiting the Omicron wave, or the current Omicron wave. We don't know what will happen in the future, but we're currently entering, but we're currently exiting that wave. And it's very clear that the hospitals can breathe again. Infections are falling. So this is very optimistic.
It's so great to hear about the relative health of the country in terms of the coronavirus pandemic. Bira, turning to you, I wonder if the coalition will be so healthy after not having something to link them together like the pandemic that has for the past 2 years been this anchor of emergency after emergency restrictions.
I don't think the pandemic was ever the glue that put them together. As a matter of fact, when this coalition was formed, we actually all thought the corona was behind us. It was right before the Delta wave. When the coalition was formed and the government was sworn in June of last year, it wasn't even on the table. It actually sprung up on us like 3 or 4 weeks later. So I don't think that's the glue that holds them together. The glue that holds them together is a different kind of virus. I think it has more to do with politics and the way that this country has been shaping for the past 3 or 4 years, which is the pro-BB, that is Benjamin Netanyahu, and anti-BB campaigns. And as long as Netanyahu is on the stage, and as long as he's, I would say jokingly, threatening to return, and as long as he aspires to be prime minister again, this coalition will remain intact.
Well, I see I put my foot in it in that question, which leads us to our next topic. Nathan, you have a really fascinating study of human feces, and it's really important in terms of findings for predicting or preventing heart attacks. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, the study basically took 200 people who'd recently had heart attacks, very recently, I'm talking about hours, and took a sample of their microbiome, took samples that gave an indication of what was going on in their gut, and they managed to identify very clear patterns among the people who had heart attacks compared to other people. This meant that there was a certain type of bacteria that was missing in their gut, also some differences in blood. And this doesn't sound very exciting, but if you think about it and drill down a little bit, if there are signatures, they call them signatures or kind of patterns in people's guts that are specific to people who are about to have heart attacks, that's potentially really exciting because perhaps you may be able to actually intervene and prevent heart attacks before they happen, because the gut could become a kind of early warning signal. And also perhaps you can actually replace the lacking bacteria in the gut and see if that makes a difference and actually prevents those heart attacks. So the research that happened in Israel, you know, it hasn't yet established that kind of causative line. It hasn't yet established the sense of, okay, the bacteria is missing, and therefore if you replace it, it will necessarily prevent the heart attacks. But the scientists behind this study are pretty confident that it is causative, and that potentially they could produce pills based on, you know, replacing those bacteria. You actually make the pills by taking the bacteria from the poo of healthy people. Charming. But that is the plan. And the plan is that potentially they could, A, use this research for diagnosis, and B, use this research to prevent preventative pills that could help, among other causes. It's one of many causes, but potentially help to prevent heart attacks. That is the hope. It's all still on a research level, but that is the hope.
Really fascinating. Thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.